Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with my partner, Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning there, Marky.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you feeling? I'm great. I'm very much looking forward to today's show.
I think it's going to be an awesome show. We got two very, very different guests coming on the show.
We're going to be talking later, starting in the next segment, about mercury in fish. There have been a lot of warnings out there about mercury levels in fish, and a number of environmental advocacy groups are calling the warnings by the EPA and the FDA a bellwether to look at what we're doing to our oceans. I mean, if we have to be careful about how much fish we eat pulled out of the ocean, maybe that's a problem. But there's one organization called the Center for Consumer Freedom, which has their own website called Fish Scam, where they say this is a bunch of hogwash and it's a bunch of long-haired hippie, environmental crazy people fear-mongering. So we've invited the research director from the Center for Consumer Freedom, which runs fishscam.com, to join us in a discussion with Jackie Savitz, who's the seafood contamination director for Oceana.
Mm-hmm. And you've heard us talk about both of these groups, and actually we've had Jackie Savitz on the show before talk about both of these groups.
And Mark and I have looked into this, and you know how complex fish is, mm-hmm. and the environmental issues around fish are. So we thought we would ask two of the top people in the country who are really at the center of each side of this debate to come in and talk about it directly. And so this is the first time we've done this on The Restaurant Guys, so I hope that you enjoy the panel discussion.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a fairly serious show today. These guys are definitely at opposite ends of the spectrum.
So I got to tell you something else that's fairly serious. We have reservation at Mario Batali's new restaurant, which is called Del Posto, which is his highest end restaurant yet.
Yeah, Mario's trying to be the first 4-star Italian restaurant
in
New York City.
And if anybody can do it, he can. Boy, I love that man's food, and I think he's a nice guy, and I'm a big fan.
Well, he's got this restaurant empire that he's developed, and I think there are some people out there who have restaurant empires whose maybe business model I don't respect as much as Mario's.
Well, and their food's not as good consistently, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of celebrity television chefs who, if you cook their recipes at home, they're not as good as they are, and if you go to their restaurants, depending on which restaurant you go to, it's very inconsistent. All of Mario's restaurants, anything he's mm-hmm. ever been involved with, I've thought was great.
Yeah, Babbo was my favorite restaurant in Manhattan for a long time.
When it first opened up, we went there before it got reviewed. I was there like 10 times. Anyway, so this restaurant Del Posto is set to be, he's trying to get 4 stars from the Times, which will be the first Italian restaurant to do mm-hmm. so. And it's a monstrously huge restaurant with very few seats. It's in a very trendy neighborhood of Manhattan. And the reservation, and the idea is also you get, the table is yours for the night. They're not mm-hmm. interested in doing turns at all. So we made a reservation for, it's turned out to be 9. It's me and Mark, our sommelier, a former captain in the restaurant who's a friend of ours, and 2 visiting chefs. Mm-hmm. Who
basically all restaurant people.
All restaurant folks. So we get this reservation. It was a hard reservation to get for us, okay? We're pretty good at getting reservations. So we got this reservation, and then the quiz we had to take, it reminded me of that Steve Martin movie where he goes to the bank.
Well, we're a party greater than 4, so one of the things that we have to do is we have to pre-order all of our food.
Yeah, you've heard of a deposit? They fax us the menu. We know what we're having. The food is ordered. Now, I don't know if it's stuff that takes 2 days to cook, but I guess, I don't know. I mean, we've eaten at 3-star Michelin restaurants in France. We've eaten at great restaurants all around the world. No one has ever made me pre-order.
That's not true.
Who?
You forgot about the Peking duck. You got to order 24 hours in advance.
There might be a dish, but no, they sent us a fax, and I felt like an idiot because the 4 or 5 of us are sitting around my office saying, okay, and then what do we have for the next course? And we're planning our dinner 2 weeks in advance.
2 weeks in advance.
It's crazy.
The other thing is the deposit. You do put a deposit down on your reservation, and it within from 10 days out, a little bit of it goes away each day as you get closer to the day.
It's like booking a wedding, you know? Should we hire a band? I don't know.
See, you know what I don't understand about that? And why do you take a deposit in a restaurant? Why I take a deposit in a restaurant? I take a deposit in a restaurant in case you don't come and that seat has to sit empty.
In case you don't come and don't call.
Don't come, don't call, and that table has to sit empty. That's my defense for booking, let's say, on Valentine's Day or booking a large group or a large room.
Yeah, so why the 10-day advance notice?
Why the 10-day advance notice? Everybody knows that Mario can book that table 5 days in advance, 4 days in advance, 3 days in advance if he wants to. I'm curious as to that, and it's something that I want to ask him.
But I have to say, it's also a very expensive restaurant, and if they are planning on one seating a night, it's likely that, you know, people would want to make those reservations to hold them, which is another thing that people do. You make several reservations and you hold them, and then they cancel a couple at the last minute because they want to keep their options open, which New Yorkers are notorious for.
You say that, you know, one of the holidays that's notorious for that as well is Valentine's Day. And then so someone will make a reservation at four or five or six different restaurants, then spring that on their date and say, okay, where do you want to go?
And then five restaurants have empty tables.
And five restaurants have an empty table.
And have turned away 100 people for it.
And to me, it's unfair to the patrons. It's unfair to the patrons who wanted to sit at that table and then couldn't come to dinner and ended up going to their second or third choice because a table sat empty because somebody made a reservation.
For those of you who don't know Mark, who haven't visited the website and seen, Mark's a large guy. And Mark's a bruiser. Mark is a very strong guy. He was a strong guy in college.
My bruising days are over.
And I remember in college, he was a stopper of fights more than a fighter, but he stopped some pretty big guys from fighting, one by picking him up from his face. You remember you picked that one guy up by his face?
I do not recall, Senator.
And he said, you're going home now. You're going to stop fighting.
Senator, said, I did not pick that man up by his face.
You picked him up by his face and slammed him down on the hood of a car and said, you're going to stop fighting and go home now. And he said, I'm going to stop fighting and go home now.
That's a really long time ago in a faraway place.
Anyway, Mark is a big dude, but Mark hasn't really physically threatened too many people except a couple of people we've thrown out of the bar in a long time. But I do remember the only time that you've really gotten physically aggressive with one of our friends was when you were in Manhattan and you said, where are we going to dinner? And he said, I don't know, I got reservations at a few places. And he didn't cancel.
There were 22 guys. And we were at a bachelor party, actually.
Yeah.
And the bachelor party was in Manhattan, and most of the guys were from New Jersey. And he said, oh, I made a reservation in New Jersey, and I made a reservation in Manhattan, so we could go to either place. And it was for 22 people, and the reason I got upset with him, and I didn't get physical with him at all, but the reason I got upset with him and said, make that phone call right this minute.
See how you're pointing your finger? That's physical. That says I'm going to beat the tar out of you.
Make that phone call
you're
right
physical
this minute.
With me. Right now.
What I said to him, thank you, sir, don't interrupt me,
sorry.
Was make that phone call right now, because that restaurant's going to sit there waiting for 22 people to arrive. Some waiter's not going to get paid tonight.
Anything. Some waiter's going to show up, wait 3 hours, go home with $7 in his pocket.
And some restaurant may be forced to close because...
You're an idiot.
Because you can't make that phone call. Listen, making reservations in multiple places... It's just not cool. I'm sorry.
And if you want to
make up your mind.
If you want to make reservations in multiple places and cancel them 10 days out, then that's fine if it's not for 20 people. But, you know, so I do understand where this is coming from.
Right.
And you know what? Mario is, to my mind, one of the best people cooking in the world, honestly. And I really do believe that.
I totally
that.
Agree with that.
And this restaurant is going to be his flagship with Lydia Bastianich and Joe Bastianich. And I don't. Look, I've never done this to go to a restaurant before, and I've gone to a lot of restaurants
in
my
life.
So we're going to report back to you how our meal was at Del Posto and hopefully get Mario on the show.
And what I'm asking you is cancel your reservations. Even if it's 5 minutes from the time you need to be at that restaurant, give that restaurant a chance to refill those table seats.
And remember,
and they'll appreciate
there's a waiter somewhere working for $2 an hour waiting for you to show up, and the restaurant can't always fill the table. Anyway, it's going to be pretty interesting. Listen, we're going to talk with Jackie Savitz and David Martosko from Center for Consumer Freedom and Oceana.org about mercury poisoning in fish, and it should be a lively debate. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey everybody, welcome back. Here with Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys, and we have with us a couple of special guests today, kind of an interesting discussion. Recently we've seen a lot of news about the reports in the EPA warning of high levels of contamination in fish of mercury and warnings of the FDA that pregnant women and children especially should limit their consumption of a lot of fish and keep fish like tuna down to 6 ounces per week. According to some, these warnings are clarion bell, warning us of the consequences of our actions environmentally. There are some groups, however, that say these warnings are nonsense and a result of a concerted effort of fear-mongering by other groups, that some of which have hidden agendas. This is a controversial issue with a lot of seemingly at stake, so rather than get your information from a 30-second commercial from either side, we decided to invite a couple of people who know a lot more about the topic than we do. Jackie Savitz is with Oceana, an environmental advocacy organization. She's the director of their seafood contamination campaign, and she says that the FDA warnings are cause for legitimate concern. Their website is oceana.org. David Martosko is with the Center for Consumer Freedom. They run a website called fishscam.com, and he's their director of research. His position is that the warnings and advocacy around them are hogwash, the result of fear-mongering by groups with hidden agendas. David and Jackie, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming to talk with us.
Welcome to the show, guys. We're glad to have you both here.
Thanks a lot.
Hi, thanks for having us.
David, let's start with you. Your website is called Fish Scam. Why is it called Fish Scam? Who do you feel is scamming us? Who are the fear-mongers, and why are they doing that?
Well, I think there is a segment of the environmental movement that is using fish as a vehicle to get Americans all excited about the electric power generation and coal-fired power plants, which do generate a small amount of mercury in the atmosphere. Only about 1 or 2% of the mercury that we find in fish can be traced back to power generation in the United States. So it's really debatable whether or not it's an appropriate argument to say that the power companies are poisoning your children's tuna fish sandwich. But regardless of where the mercury comes from, the mercury levels in the fish we eat are not a health danger to anybody. The only documented cases of mercury poisoning ever in the scientific literature came from Japan and Iraq, with amounts of mercury that were literally hundreds of times more than what we get in the fish we eat. And
okay.
Even the federal government knows this, and so they adjust their safety levels by a factor of 10.
Mm. So, Jackie, do you feel that your organization is wrongly fear-mongering?
Absolutely not. Mark, you know that mercury is one of the chemicals that we have the most information on, the most robust science of any of the chemicals that are out there. And that science has been reviewed by the Environmental Protection Agency, the Food and Drug Administration, and even our most prestigious scientific body, the National Academy of Sciences. And the result of that has been an advisory by the Food and Drug Administration to let women of childbearing age and kids know there are certain fish they should avoid. That doesn't mean they have to stop eating fish. It just means they want to make informed choices.
So the I'm sorry,
I'll let people know about that.
Well, so the FDA has come out with this advisory, and David, you say that advisory is overstated. Why would the FDA overstate something? You come up with a factor of 10 times the level that's actually dangerous is what they're saying.
Well, the FDA, I'm not saying it. I mean, the FDA has said it. The FDA's own literature says that their action level for mercury in fish was designed to limit consumers' exposure to one-tenth of the amount of mercury that might be a health concern. And the EPA does the same thing. Now, look, it's a normal feature of toxicology and environmental science to build these safety factors in. You know, we expect the scientists at the federal government to do this when they're talking about, you know, lead in paint or cyanide in water, because there's nothing good about cyanide in water. But fish is a healthy food.
Is there something
What's good about mercury in fish?
Well, there's nothing good or bad about the levels of mercury in fish. They're irrelevant. They're not harming anybody. And,
well, but hold on a second. Let's go back to your analogy. You said to be worried about the level of cyanide in water is a valid concern, but the level of mercury in fish is not. What's the difference?
The difference is that fish is a healthy food.
Well, water is a healthy substance. We'd die without water.
But people are being scared. In fact, consumption data from the Centers for Disease Control shows that right around the same time this FDA advisory came out, Americans, especially women of childbearing age, started eating less fish. Almost half of the consumption dropped off of fish of women of childbearing age.
Yeah, I think
that's
that,
a bad thing.
I think that none of us, and frankly, none of us who are on the show today, want people to eat less fish. I think that.
But that's the unintended consequence.
Yeah, I
that's actually not true. There are a number of things in that statement that aren't true. First of all, fish consumption is at an all-time high. It's gone up 12% since the first FDA advice came out in 2001. So our consumption levels aren't going down. What that shows is that people get that there are benefits to eating fish more than they understand that there are risks. And there's nothing to say that they can't continue to eat fish if they just avoid, you know, high-mercury fish. So let me just say one more thing. This one-tenth argument is baloney. You even said yourself, David, that this is a typical practice in toxicology. It's used to set standards for chemicals, but typically most chemicals get more than a tenfold safety factor. They typically get 100-fold or 1,000-fold. in this case, the EPA chose to use the minimum safety factor largely because of the economic consequences of moving people away from fish. So, in fact,
tell that to the Canadian government.
A compromise. I'm sorry.
Yeah, one at a time. Go ahead, Jackie, finish your point, and we'll come back to David in a second.
Well, just the point is the tenfold safety factor was actually a compromise. It could have actually been a lot higher factor, which would have argued for less fish consumption.
So, David, let's bring this back to you. If the FDA has an internal number that says what's safe, and they multiply it by 10, and that's what the FDA feels is safe, why would the FDA come out with the wrong number? And I've only got 30 seconds, but we'll let you come back to it after the break.
Sure. Well, you know, there are other government agencies, including the United Nations, World Health Organization, that use a different safety factor, a factor of only 3 or 4, which if our government did what the rest of the world is doing, nobody would be able to raise money in the environmental sector by claiming that anybody's poisoning our fish.
We'll be back in just a moment with Jackie Savitz from Oceana and David Martosko from the Center for Consumer Freedom talking about mercury and fish, a lively debate in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term, good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, and we're talking today with David Martosko. He is with the Center for Consumer Freedom. He's their director of research, and he is of the position that the recent warnings on mercury contamination of fish are overblown. And Jackie Savitz is with Oceana, an environmental advocacy organization, who says that those things are right on and a real clarion bell to look further into things. I interrupted you just a moment ago when I asked why, if the FDA, David, has a number that they feel is the right number to publish to where we should be concerned, why would they use the wrong number, which is 10 times more safe? Why would the FDA do that?
Because it's typical government work. That's what the government does when it comes up with toxicology findings. It builds in sort of arbitrary safety factors just to be extra sure that nobody gets anywhere near a danger line. But nobody tells the public how those calculations are done.
Okay.
I think the public is smart enough to understand that there is a danger line and you shouldn't cross it.
All right.
But when we cross the EPA's reference dose, all we're doing is we're crossing 10% of that danger line. There's no harm there.
Jackie, where does that number come from that David's talking about?
Let me explain where that number comes from.
Please.
Basically, it starts off with what they call the lowest observed effects level. That's the lowest level at which they've seen effects of mercury. That's 58 micrograms per liter. Don't get caught up on the numbers. And that's the number where they've seen the lowest effects. They have not found a no observed effects level. When they turn that into a consumption level, they apply an uncertainty factor. They can be applied for, typically they're applied because of interhuman variability, just like people have different tolerances to alcohol. You know, we have different tolerances to mercury. That usually gets tenfold. They usually give tenfold if you have children, if there are effects on children, typically, especially if they're related to the brain and nervous system development. That's another tenfold you usually get.
Which you're saying mercury is.
Which it is. And then third, there's oftentimes a tenfold safety factor when you don't have a no observed effects level, which we don't for mercury. So in fact, they could have applied a hundredfold or a thousandfold safety factor, but like I said, they chose a tenfold as a compromise because they had to take into consideration the economic issues.
Okay, this is a lively debate, and we're going to talk about the difference between the FDA and the EPA and the competing versions of the science that's out there when we come back after the news. And everyone should know that this is a very important topic, and there are differences of opinion out there. We're only going to be able to cover an hour of it, and there are two websites that have very different points of view. And Oceana.org is the website from Jackie Savitz's organization, an environmental advocacy group, and the Center for Consumer Freedom operates a website called fishscam.com, and we have two diametrically opposed points of view here. I'm going to get a little more into it when we come back from the news. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcast through iTunes.
Today, we're talking about mercury in fish. We've seen a lot of news recently about reports from the EPA and action by the FDA suggesting that certain people limit their intakes of certain fish. We have with us to discuss the issue Jackie Savitz. She's with Oceana, an environmental advocacy organization, and she's the director of their seafood contamination campaign. And she says that the FDA warnings are cause for legitimate concern. And their website, if you want to learn more, is oceana.org. David Martosko is with the Center for Consumer Freedom. They run a website called fishscam.com, and he's their director of research. His position is that the warnings and advocacy around them are hogwash and the result of fear-mongering by groups with sometimes hidden agendas. Now, David, you said earlier in the program that you felt that the threshold that we're using in the United States is very restrictive by world standards. Can you give us an example? Do we have the most restrictive standards in the world?
We have some of them. Now, you have to keep in mind that our EPA and FDA are pretty much in lockstep now, and they weren't always. But there are, you know, there are some standards in Canada that are more strict than ours, but some standards that are laxer. The World Health Organization standard is far more relaxed than ours.
And am I right in stating that the action level is one part per million is where we have an action level?
Yeah, the FDA has an action level that refers to the amount of mercury actually found in a piece of fish.
Right.
And the EPA's reference dose refers to the amount of methylmercury found in your blood or your hair. So they're different agencies that measure different things. But in general, it's clear that our government's standards are the most restrictive in the world. Consider a country like Japan. This is a great example, because we talk a lot about numbers and scientific methods and reference doses, but look at real people. In Japan today, right now, 87% of the population has more mercury in their bloodstream than our EPA says is safe. 87% of the population is above our government's reference dose. Now, if that were a dangerous thing, if that were bad, you would be seeing brain neurodevelopmental problems in Japanese children. You'd be seeing learning disabilities. And I ask you, are their kids outperforming you?
Well, let's throw this back to you, Jackie. Let's talk about the comparative populations and different government standards and how they deal with the mercury issue.
Sure. I mean, first of all, you know, a number of countries, including Japan right now, are lowering their weekly intake allowances. Japan has recently reduced theirs by 40%. So I think these countries are starting to recognize that actually the mercury issue is more serious, not less
serious. So is Japan's now lower than ours, or the same as ours, or above ours?
It's not lower than ours, but okay. What they found was they needed to limit the exposure, particularly for pregnant women, and they're reviewing their list of shellfish that they will offer advice about. But the thing is, you know, about what David said is, you know, it's great to throw out numbers and theories about Japanese kids and all that, but what we're talking about are peer-reviewed scientific studies, 237 of them that were reviewed by the National Academy of Sciences. And that's a solid scientific foundation. They don't change. Our understanding of mercury doesn't change with the latest theory or the latest study.
You're not talking about 237 people. You're talking about 237 studies.
Actual studies that were reviewed by the National Academy of Sciences. And, you know, it may be one thing to say, okay, well, the tenfold safety factor, you don't have to worry about it. But, you know, most moms don't want to flirt with that. They don't want to play Russian roulette and say, okay, well, we can eat a little more. Most moms want to make sure their kids don't have any handicap whatsoever, any setback whatsoever.
Now I want to be clear. Your organization is advocating limiting intake of only certain types of fish.
That's right. And nobody's saying that, you know, that people should stop eating fish. What we're trying to do is we're trying to help people understand which are the four fish the FDA says you should avoid. It's only four fish.
And what are the four fish, Jackie?
The four fish are swordfish, tilefish, king mackerel, and shark. And the way that we've proposed doing that is to have signs posted with the FDA advisory, by the way, not the Oceana advisory, but the FDA advisory. And I don't think anybody's calling the FDA a fearmonger. have that posted where people are buying fish at the grocery store.
Let's throw this back. Where did this problem come from? And David, we'll let you go first on this one. Has the level of mercury been increasing, or has it always been there? Or where does it come from? What is the basic, as you see it, what's the basic functioning of this issue?
Most of the peer-reviewed science on this agrees that only about 1 or 2% of the mercury that reaches our fish through bioaccumulation comes from American anthropogenic sources, meaning that we created in this country.
And you're talking about all the mercury in the entire world.
I'm talking right now about the amount of mercury that shows up in the fish we eat in this country. And there's considerable evidence that the amount of mercury in fish has remained the same or even decreased during the past 100 years. One research team compared specimens of blue hake from the Atlantic Ocean that were preserved during the 1880s with similar fish caught in the 1970s, and they found no change at all in the concentration of mercury. In another study, some scientists from Princeton compared yellowfin tuna samples from 1971, I believe, with samples caught, I think, 27 years later. They expected, in their research, they said, look, we expected to find mercury increased between 10 and 25%, but they actually found a decrease. So it doesn't seem to me or to most scientists that the amount of mercury in the fish is, by and large, a product of anything human beings are doing. It's generally a natural feature of the earth and the environment. And that's the irony here, is that most of the mercury that bioaccumulates in the fish we eat comes from underground wells underneath the ocean floor, volcanoes, fissures in the ocean floor. It's a natural feature of the world. It's always been there.
Okay.
There's nothing new under the sun.
Okay, let's throw this over to Jackie. With your response, is the level of mercury increasing, and how do we know that it's coming from, and I assume that's your position, that it's coming from man-made sources?
Well, it comes from both. I mean, there are natural sources out there, but it's not, as David would suggest. The EPA says about 60% of the mercury deposited in the U.S. comes from human-related emissions.
You're saying 60%.
60%. And it's even higher in places like the Northeast and the West. And that's
way out of line.
The Mercury Report to Congress, which is a very substantial document. And
so I'm sorry. What's the science behind this that you're saying, Jackie?
It's from the Mercury Report to Congress from EPA, which is a very substantial document on mercury. Scientists like Rob Mason at University of Maryland have estimated that 50 to 75% of the mercury that's in the environment now comes from human sources like coal burning and chlorine production. So we're talking about a little more than half, no matter how you slice it.
So obviously we have different perspectives on where the mercury is coming from. But the other question, the other side of that question there, Jackie, is the mercury increasing? I mean, David quoted some studies that would seem to indicate that the mercury level has been stable for 100 years. Does your organization take issue with that?
No, the science just really isn't there to say that. I mean, it's nice to have one study, but like I said before, this mercury understanding is built on a foundation of hundreds of studies. And so when you have one study on tuna in the ocean and you see a certain trend, you think, well, maybe it tells us something. But without some kind of verification, there could be other explanations for why the mercury level didn't change. For example, the diet of tuna may have changed substantially. The predation rates on tuna may have changed substantially just based on the fishing pressure that we put on.
So what you're saying is that the jury's still out on that. And, David, what you're saying is what we have would indicate that it's not increasing.
I'm saying there's a considerable amount of science to indicate. And it's the only science we're ever going to have. I mean, you can't go back to the 19th century and catch
more
fish. But you can't go back to the 19th century and catch more fish to actually
compare. That's what they just did. They just were able to come up with that study. They can do more of that. But the point is, it doesn't really matter.
So many samples of fish available.
Hold on a second. Whether it's available or not.
I actually think my aunt has some in her freezer. If you guys need to take a look back.
Whether it's
wedding cake left from the 90s.
You know, this is usually a pretty light show. I'm glad we leveled it up just a tiny little bit. Whether the science is available or not, that doesn't make the science that's here sufficient to make a judgment. In your opinion, David, is the science that's been done, is it just a couple of fish that we've tested?
It's every fish that's available from which we can draw.
But the question is that enough fish to draw a conclusion from?
I think so, yeah. Look, if the process of human beings generating electricity by burning coal or any other process were to have deposited tremendously more mercury in the atmosphere than was there naturally, we'd be able to see it in every fish. I mean, it would just be there, and it's not.
Jackie?
You can't make it appear.
Jackie, what's your answer to that?
Well, I don't think it's really the issue. I mean, regardless of whether it's coming from human sources or not, is the level of mercury a problem? The NAS, the EPA, the FDA says yes, it is. They're not fear-mongering. They're government agencies that are paid by us to take care of us. And, you know, I'm going to tend to believe their scientists more than I believe you know, industry scientists.
Okay,
I don't always believe the FDA scientists, but usually for the other reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, now hold on a second. We're going to take a small break. We're going to come back and have and continue our discussion with Jackie Savitz from Oceana Environmental Advocacy Group and David Martosko with the Center for Consumer Freedom. We're talking about mercury levels in fish, and when we come back, we're going to talk about fishing practices overall. A heck of a discussion. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:45.
Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. We have with us two folks on opposite sides of the issue of pollution, mercury pollution of fish, who I think are often on opposite sides of things having to do with the ocean. Jackie Savitz is with Oceana, an environmental advocacy organization, and David Martosko is with the Center for Consumer Freedom. They run a website called Fish Scam, and he's their director of research. His position is that the warnings and advocacy around the recent mercury warnings are sort of hogwash. I want to turn the discussion for a moment to another issue that you both of your organizations weigh in on quite a bit. Aside from mercury poisoning, or actually, let's start with Jackie this time to switch it up. You often talk about your organization will advocate laying off certain levels of fish because certain fish stocks and certain fisheries are endangered. Is that often a problem throughout in the world fish market and the world fisheries?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a huge problem because 90% of the big fish are gone based on the most recent science. So. But
certain fish come out and we say, okay, avoid Chilean sea bass or avoid swordfish. What is your organization's position on that? I mean, are there times we just need to lay off certain fish populations?
Well, we haven't called for any boycotts or anything
right.
like that, but we have two campaigns working on that. One is dealing with bycatch, or what we call dirty fishing, which is when you catch species you're not going for. For example, catching a turtle when you're going for a swordfish. And turtles, of course, are endangered species. So that's a big problem that we're working to solve. With different hooks and other fishing techniques and things like that. And then we're also running a campaign dealing with destructive bottom trawling, which is when they drag these giant nets through deep water communities, in some cases deep water corals, and the nets basically pull up everything that's in their way. So it's kind of like bulldozing the ocean floor, and that means not only do you catch the fish, you catch everything else, including their homes.
So you destroy the habitat.
Their habitats, which makes it really hard for the fish to reestablish. And as a result of this sort of industrial fishing that we've learned how to do, in a way we've started to really fish down some populations of fish. Some of them are really long-lived fish that live longer than us even. And that's a big problem. And again, not encouraging people to stop eating fish, but, you know, to choose your fish responsibly, because our goal really is to have people continue to eat fish into the future, whether they're threatened by overfishing or whether they're threatened by mercury.
David, does your organization share any of these concerns about overfishing and when there are consumer advocacy organizations that, you know, ask people to take pressure off certain stocks of fish? Do you think that's usually inappropriate or always inappropriate?
Well, I share their concern about it, but I don't always share the methods. Now, I'm grateful to know that Oceana doesn't endorse fish boycotts, but there are certainly other groups that do. As you mentioned, we've seen concerted boycotts on Chilean sea bass, boycotts on swordfish from the Atlantic. And I think, in general, those boycotts ignore the nature of the global economy. And all they do is they take those fishing opportunities away from American fishermen. I mean, the fish are still there. Fishermen from other countries are still going to catch their limit and sometimes more than their fair share of the fish. And, you know, in many cases, taking these things off the American market is just going to hurt fishermen. It's certainly not going to change fish stocks. You know, Chilean sea bass is a great example. In America, we only consume about 12 to 14% of the global take of Chilean sea bass. You know, and no kind of consumer boycott's actually going to remove all of that from the marketplace. All you're doing is you're telling fishermen, we won't buy this from you anymore. And you're putting fishermen out of business, and I don't think that's good for anybody.
There are mechanisms to try to solve this problem, which has to do with managing our fisheries better. And a good example is, this is not an Oceana thing, but from my previous work with Chesapeake Bay Foundation, there was a big problem with striped bass, or rockfish, as you call it in New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
We call it rockfish, you call it striped bass.
Right, we call it striped bass.
So there was a big problem with striped bass in Chesapeake Bay, so they instituted a moratorium on taking striped bass for, I don't know, a couple of years that it was. And nobody was happy about that, even the environmentalists weren't, but especially those of us that like striped bass. But after a few years, the striped bass started coming back. Now they're managing the fishery in a way that the numbers aren't crashing anymore. So there's a real success story in this. So there are ways to do this so that we can keep eating these fish.
Well, I think what David was talking more about was a global fish economy like Chilean sea bass. But at the same time, I don't want to... We shouldn't sit around and do nothing when a fish
is
being overfished.
You threw out a success story. Let me throw out a failure story. I mean, the North Atlantic cod fishery sort of collapsed, if my recollection is correct, because it just got overfished. And every year we went back to the fishermen and said, well, you can't put us out of business. We have to go and get all the fish. And, you know, then they eventually went out of business because there weren't enough fish to sustain the cod fishery. What should we do? What's your prescription for how people can react when they do think that a fishery is in danger? Just nothing? Or how should consumers, should people respond?
Well, I don't know that whipping consumers up into a frenzy actually does anything. I've never seen any market survey research, so, looked at quite a bit of it, that indicates that consumers actually respond to these boycotts.
So should we just fish them out? I mean, what do private individuals do?
I think you've got to apply pressure with politicians. You've got to apply pressure at the regulatory level to do those sorts of things. But scaring the public about it when they're not going to respond, it's you know, frankly, what it does is it just helps environmental groups raise money. They're huge fundraising jobs.
But I got to tell you,
they don't actually impact the fisheries.
I got to tell you something. I think that if we're about to fish out a fishery, I think people should be scared. I mean, shouldn't we be scared?
I agree.
It doesn't work. It simply doesn't work.
But even
the restaurants that have signed on to boycott, you know, Atlantic swordfish over the last 5 years.
But
you know, the Washington Post did a survey, and most of them said boycott. What boycott?
But if we're about to fish out of fishery, shouldn't people actually be scared? That's my question. Hey, listen, we're coming to the end of our show. I want to thank you both for taking the time to talk with us. I think we've given people a lot to think about. You can go to the two competing websites, which is Oceana.org and ConsumerFreedom.org, or FishScam.com, and see what you think about it, and make up your own mind about how to proceed in the future.
Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks for having us.
All right, take care. That was Jackie Savitz and David Martosko, and we're going to put their websites up on ours to link you to them. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. What a heck of a show we just had today.
Very interesting. Two divergent views on a similar topic.
Yeah, I mean, the Center for Consumer Freedom is an organization that represents, they say they represent restaurants, mm-hmm. big chain restaurants, I think.
They don't represent our restaurant
industry. No, they don't. Jackie Savitz's organization is an environmental advocacy organization. One of the things that I think is very complicated, the problem with fish is it is a complicated issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you want to know what fish to avoid because the FDA says there's too much mercury in it, how much you can eat, there are competing mercury mm-hmm. calculators out there.
One of the things we didn't touch on either is Oceana's view of what we should be eating and what we shouldn't be eating. Really, for males that are not children, there really are no stipulations. They say go ahead and eat pretty much whatever you want.
But there's still a warning.
Yes, there's still a warning. And the warning is for children and is for women of childbearing age. That's really who the warning's directed at.
Yep.
And part of that is because mercury increases, and most of the studies say that mercury increases as it goes to
the womb.
Right,
the
baby.
The fetus, there's a lot of recent science that says the contamination in the fetus might be 70% higher than it is in the mother.
And of course, you know, the fetus is at a greater risk anyway. So if you're putting more mercury into your body and putting your baby at risk, that's where most of the
tell you something. If you told me that the dose of cyanide that was going to cause me problems was ten tablets, and there was only one tablet of cyanide in the water, still wouldn't drink it. Sorry, out.
Yeah, but at the same time,
one tenth is not enough. That's not enough of a safety margin for me.
1/10 is not enough of a safety margin. I'm totally with you there.
That's food.
But,
that's my wife.
But
that's my kid.
I totally agree, and I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jennifer watched her tuna intake. She's a huge tuna fan. She watched her tuna intake when she was pregnant.
Hey, listen,
you
need to find out more about this stuff and go make a decision on your own. If you want to go to oceana.org, and they have all sorts of information so you know what fish is safe, what fish is not, what fish is endangered, what fish is not, according to them.
And again, the fish we're talking about here are large predator fish. Eat a lot of fish. Fish is really good for you. Fish like salmon is
trout.
Especially good for you.
And so go to oceana.org, and they have a mercury calculator for you that's based on the FDA's published recommended guidelines at www.gotmercury.org. We'll put that up on the web as well. And FishScam says that's a bunch of bunk, and they have a different mercury calculator that says you can eat like 100 pounds of fish or whatever. and that's at fishscam.org.
I'm not taking that risk.
Got to make up your own mind on this one. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.